Yeah, so siblings without rivalry. So the reason why you're all here is because this is a major issue. That's how it goes. We raise families. We deal with children. We are children. We have our own siblings as we have grown from our youth into our older age as adults. And it is really fascinating if you think about how much of our lives are impacted by the upbringing that we had, by the family order that we were brought up in, by the experiences we had as children, and some of the rivalries that we had as kids follow us into adulthood. And it's a fascinating concept. It's a study in human nature and psychology, how that works. And then as we take it to the next generation, raising our own families, and they continue to, it's an issue. It's a universal issue. The very first two brothers that existed, Cain and Hevel, Cain and Abel, resulted in the very first murder in history. That's how history got started. World history, mankind, the first two siblings that existed, couldn't figure that out. It continued all the way through Yaakov and Esav, Yosef and his brother. The Medrash, in fact, records that if it were not for the fact that Yaakov gave his son Yosef the coat that was worth more money than all the other clothing that he gave to his other siblings, the whole issue never would have begun. They never would have sold him. He wouldn't have gone down to Egypt. The whole thing is traced back to the favoritism that is shown, and it's really just a universal concept. So let's get right into it. Let's just start with a theoretical question just to sort of understand things. Let's imagine for a moment, if you will, you are the right-hand man of a CEO of a major Fortune 500 company, and you have worked really hard to get into this position. You've been in the position about 10 years, and it is fabulous. You have this relationship with this guy. You are right-hand man. You go on trips together. You make all your plans together, and you do things. You are simply running this company together. Families have gotten close. After about 10 years of working in the company, the CEO calls you into his office one day and he says, "I just want you to know, I'm really so pleased with the way this is going. It's been fabulous. Our relationship is great. We've been able to accomplish with this company. It's fabulous. It's gone so well, in fact, that I've decided to hire a second assistant just like you." Your reaction?
Oh, no. I'm in.
Now, if you were taking notes, I would actually have you write down your feelings, your response, your reaction when your boss calls you in. What emotions would course through your veins as he says to you, "It's been so great, I want to have someone just like you"? Well, he ignores your immediate reaction. We'll get to know that. I mean, I would actually, the exercise would be like, what is it like to experience that? So he's hired, begins, first month goes by. And he's one of these hotshot guys right out of school. He's full of energy and passion and talent. And you go to a business luncheon, and all your colleagues are talking about him. He's so amazing. Isn't he great? He's so full of energy and talent. He's so exciting to have around. And they see you, and they greet you, and they say, "Oh, hi, how are you? By the way, how is it? Isn't it great working with so-and-so? How is it for you?" Your response, your reaction, rage. I mean, you're ready to kill this guy. And someone is there asking, you know, how did you feel? How was it working with this guy? Not necessarily the way that you'd want it to be. A week goes by, you come into your office, and you're not going to believe it. This guy is sitting at your desk, on your computer, flipping through your files. You come in and say, what are you doing? As well, the room is all empty. You weren't using your computer anyway, so I decided to just check it out. And I see some of your files over here, and he starts making little corrections on some of the things that you were working on and some of the projects, and he starts making comments. So you throw him out of your office. You're not allowed to be in here. Throw him out. 2 seconds later, he comes back with the boss. The boss has his arm wrapped around this new guy. And the boss says, "Come on, what's the big deal? You weren't using your computer anyway. Why can't you just share a little bit?" Your reaction? How do you feel about the boss?
Insensitive.
Right? How do you feel about this guy?
Get him out of here.
I mean, this guy is you're ready to go. So you have a full day planned. All your activities, all your meetings. You got a lot to accomplish. At 9:30, the boss knocks on your door, pokes his head in and says, "You know, I was planning on spending the day with this new guy to show him around. Some emergency came up. I can't do it. Can you just, like, hang out with him for the day for me instead?" How do you feel about him now? Well, As is no surprise to you, we announced to our children that there's a new sibling coming along the way. And we're really excited about it. It's really great, isn't it? And from the child's perspective, you know, not quite as exciting as it is for us. Because right now, the child is really enjoying the attention that they get from us as parents. And we as parents are their lifeline. The attention we give them, the love we give them, it's everything to them. And we come in and we say, this is so exciting, isn't it? And then the new baby comes, and people, they really mean well, they do. But if you watch what happens, they come over to the older child, the four-year-old, the five, or the six-year-old, and they say, hi, how are you, how's school? Look at the baby! And they go crazy, oohing and eyeing over the baby, and they turn to the child and they say, how do you like your new brother? And this poor little 4 or 5 year old is ready to throw his little brother out of the stroller and smash his head in. Like, I'm not getting any of this attention. Everybody's oohing and aahing, cooling over this little baby. What about me? And really, we as adults, we mean well when we do that. But it very often is very painful to the child. And then the 4 or 5 year old, as the children grow up, all their stuff gets taken. Their clothing is used, their toys are put. And as parents, we say things like, aw, come on, why can't you share? You weren't using it anyway. We wouldn't like it if it's our computer. We wouldn't like it if it's our files. Yet all of a sudden it's okay to do to our children. And then we start asking the older siblings to babysit. Oh, just watch the baby. I just have to run. That's okay with you? Okay, great. And then we're gone. Whether or not it's, depending on how old they are, whether or not it's just a short few minutes to run downstairs or something. And they had their plans, whatever they were doing, and then we like sort of cut in, and we have them doing what we want them doing. And then we wonder why there seems to be this lack of love between the siblings. Why they don't seem to, the older siblings don't necessarily appreciate the younger siblings as much as we would like them to. And it's really not very hard to understand when you think of it from the perspective of the younger child. Now, I've really been focusing these examples on what it's like for the older child, but we could very easily switch that and just make it as the middle child. The middle child, of course, is the classic syndrome of not having the excitement of the accomplishments of the older. The older one's doing everything for the first time. First things in the family are great. And the baby's just cute. Babies are just the baby of the family. However old the baby gets is always just delicious. And then the poor middle child's always just struggling. We could easily manipulate the situations about the younger child who always feels overmatched by their older siblings. They can never compete with them. They can't play with them. Their sitter party is just really not so exciting for the parents who've done it, you know, 3 or 4 times already. It's just, they don't get the same excitement. They don't have the pictures on the fridge. They see. There are pictures on the fridge of their older siblings every stage of the way, and they're not there. It's like you can't hide it. That's just the way that it goes. Not always, but that's often how it goes. So when you think about it from a child's perspective, it's not hard to hear or understand what it is that they're going through when we actually take the time to think about the experience that they are dealing with. And do not think for a moment this is just little kids we're talking about. This goes on for as old as we get. You will talk to people and they still harbor feelings that they had as they were growing up, dealing with certain things in their family dynamic that they had to contend with. Let's go back for a moment to our little example that we were just playing around with. You have this new guy at the office that you're dealing with. So you go into your boss after a month or two of this, you say, I can't take this anymore. I can't handle this. This is absolutely right. I can't work under these conditions. This guy is driving me crazy. It's not fair. He's taking my stuff. So you say to him, can we just get rid of him? Can we just put an end to this experiment? Finished. Now I want to give you a couple of scenarios as to how your boss responds. And let's go through how we would take the response that he gives us. Boss says to you, oh, that's nonsense. This is ridiculous. You have absolutely nothing to complain about. What's the problem with this? How do you feel if he says that?
Invalidated.
Totally invalidated. Boss says to you, I really don't like it when you speak that way about him. If you don't have anything nice to say about him, please, I'd really rather you not say anything at all.
Who's sorry to
get on? Right? But let's say he says to you, listen, this is just the way that it is. You just need to accept it and move on.
Deep trouble.
It's not fair.
Or he says, listen, you know I love the both of you the same. I love having both of you here in the office. You're both great.
Acceptable.
It's not true.
Not true? You think acceptable?
It's treacherous.
It's, eh. So siblings create the following issues. This is really what I just want to focus on for a couple of things as we get into this tonight. The reality is as follows. Siblings have to deal with difficult stuff. It's part of life. It is a constant that they'll have to deal with. And on the positive side, people will argue having siblings and having to deal with siblings will benefit them in the sense it'll make them tougher, it'll make them resilient, it'll teach them speed and agility as they physically work, as they get older, roughhousing and running around the house with each other. It'll work on being clever and hurtful, what's the difference, as they learn to speak to each other in close quarters. It'll teach them how to defend themselves, it'll teach them how to compromise, all sorts of good things. But the bottom line is the very presence of a sibling represents to the child less time, less affection, less love in their minds. And our job then as parents is to address and navigate what they're dealing with. So what I want to do tonight is three things. We'll just focus on three tools, and then tomorrow night we'll work on two others. So in my mind, as I broke this down, this is just me speaking, I didn't actually see this in writing, but I have found in my own experiences that there are two categories, two types of issues that we deal with as parents. One would be simple, small, basic day-to-day activities. Living in the same home together creates friction. It has nothing to do with like sibling rivalry, stuff that will last them forever and their whole lifetime. It's just you put a bunch of kids in a home together, be it 3 and 4 and 5, be it 12 and 13 and 14, be it late. You put a bunch of people in a home, however big the home is, it is not big enough. And that will create certain tensions. So that's like one category that we have to deal with. They're just simply dealing with the tools and the skills. How do we navigate the issues that come up as the kids are around? And it could, the same issues would come up if they had their friends over. It's just how do children learn to handle themselves? But with siblings, it's constant, and they're always dealing with it. And then there's the larger, more existential issues of the deep resentments and jealousies and competitions that take place. That's much more than, he took my toy, she took my game, he took the last cookie. Like, that kind of stuff goes on, and we need to know how to handle that. Sometimes that stuff grows into bigger stuff, but there are bigger issues in the sense where we as parents play a role in that, in which we define children as having a certain role. This one's the good one, this one's the not as good one, just taking a classic example of what sometimes happens, I'm sure not in this room, where that becomes a much larger issue. That's not just a tool or a skill. How do I handle when my kid comes running to me and says, so-and-so hit me, which we need to know how to do. But that's an issue of much larger in terms of how we handle the roles that we use as far as raising the children. So tonight I want to focus on the first issue, just basic tools handling the kids as they deal with their issues as they go along. An example that we were just talking about, we have this new coworker at work. And the boss gives you all of those responses. What at the end of the day is wrong with all of his responses? When you come into him and you say, this isn't working for me. I can't handle working with this guy. He's driving me crazy. He's taking all of my stuff. He's using my things. And the boss says anything from along the lines of, there's no reason for you to be saying that. Or he says, I don't like it when you speak that way. Just accept it. Whatever he says, what's the main problem with all of his responses?
He's not being sensitive to you.
Exactly. He's not hearing you. So the main things that we're going to focus on, let me just make a mention of this, is based on this particular book, Faber and Maslisch. It's called Siblings Without Rivalry. It's a fabulous book. I highly recommend it. All of Faber and Maslisch's work, how to talk so kids will listen so kids will talk. It's great stuff. We're just going to be borrowing stuff from her. The cartoons that you have are all from there. All of the copyright laws and this stuff is all it's from them. I just photocopied it. It's not my stuff. So I want to borrow some of the concepts that they bring. Talk about three tools as we go through, just as far as some of these issues go. Issue number one is, as from their mentor, their Rebbe, was a Jew by the name of Chaim Gino. It was an Israeli fellow who came over to the States, became a child psychologist, very well known. He wrote a book called Between Parent and Child, which is what they based their work on. So he has a phrase in there which I like to borrow when it comes to this issue. And his phrase is, the title of his chapter is, birds fly, fish swim, and people People feel. That's how he concludes that. Birds fly, that's just what they do. Fish swim, and people feel. And rule number one as far as dealing with siblings and stuff that goes on in the house is to recognize always that is a reality. We have feelings. We can deny them, we can suppress them, but kids will naturally deal with it. They have them. They're there, and you can't stop that. And we don't often like the fact that our kids have feelings because their feelings, being that they're not able to mask them as well as we are as adults, often come out in offensive ways, like, I hate grandma, stuff like that. And they're talking about your mom. And we don't know how to deal with that. So we say things like, no, you don't. Don't be silly. You love grandma. And the kid says, no, I hate grandma. Well, that's not a conversation that we're comfortable having about our own mom and our little four-year-old who's saying that she hates grandma. But the bottom line is the child saying they have a strong feeling. Now, whether or not the child even knows what it means to hate grandma is irrelevant. When you say to the child, no, you don't, you love grandma. So in this context, it happens all the time in which children have to deal with the feelings that they have, or we, I should say, as adults, in the first step, the first tool in sibling rivalry is first addressing what it is that the child is going through. Now, this starts at little children, and it goes all the way up, and you'd be amazed as we, as adults, continue to deal with this, where this is not addressed. So, for this, let's take a look at some of the, at your handouts, at some of the examples. We'll use the examples that they have. It's on it's page one, as I labeled it. Now, it's helpful to see things. That's why I photocopied this, just to see the scenarios. These are pretty basic drawings, but it is significant. Let's take a look, just starting from the top. Little mom's busy feeding the baby. Child comes over and says, you're always with the baby. Now, we would have a tendency to respond and say, to disprove how often we actually do spend time with the child, which is probably true. We might be very sensitive to the fact that we just had a new baby, and we're not spending as much time with the older children as we previously did, and we go out of our way to spend time with them. And then what do we get? The moment we start focusing on the baby, we get the child coming over and saying, you're always with the baby. So the most natural response is to deny that. To deny and to prove our case that it's not true that we're spending a lot of time with you. But what's really going on in this child's mind?
I miss you.
Right. Exactly. The child is saying, I want to spend more time with you. Now, the child really does not have a chalkboard up in their room where they're counting hours, how much you spent with me and how much you spent with the baby and how much I got before the baby and how much is after the baby. And no idea. Child is coming and saying, you're spending your time with the baby. So that the response needs to be, instead of saying, no, I didn't. Didn't we just read a book together? Because no 5-year-old 10-year-old or 20-year-old will respond, oh yeah, I forgot we just went out to lunch yesterday. This is, by the way, in marriage just as much, in which a wife says to her husband, we don't spend enough time together anymore. And the husband says, we went out to lunch 2 days ago. Wrong answer. It's true, but it's the wrong answer because she's not saying we haven't gone out to lunch. She's saying, I don't feel like we're spending enough time together. So to argue and to say we do spend enough time together is not going to be a productive conversation. I have tried it, and I can tell you from experience, it doesn't work. So it doesn't work with our children either, except it's more, we think easier that it's easier to do with our children. And then sometimes when we can get away with it, we could somehow prove to them that we have. So step number one, just in dealing with it, is acknowledge. Now again, this is really, this particular tool in the applications we'll focus on, we'll have to deal with sibling rivalry, but it's an application that has to deal with all aspects, is first get into the world of the child. Where are they coming from? So mom, the correct response therefore should be, you don't like that I'm spending so much time with her. The child will say, yeah, I don't like it. And then you can say, well, what would you like? A conversation can ensue when the child feels that they've been heard or recognized. Now, this next one is a classic one. This one happens in houses all across the world all the time. Sitting at the Shabbos table, child comes running in, crying, my older sibling said I'm a stupid baby. Now, how do we react when the child comes in and they're right, that's what happened? The older sibling called them a stupid baby. What do we do?
Oh, you're not a stupid baby.
So we could either do that, right? We say, you're not. Now, if the insult was bad enough, what will we do? We'll immediately get up out of our chair and storm off to speak to the offending party. We don't walk around calling our siblings stupid baby, you stupid baby, or something along those lines. Now, none of which has really addressed what's going on. Child has come to you and said, I was just called in this particular cartoon, I was called a moron, I was called annoying, I was called stupid, I was called a baby, whatever it is that they come with. How do you respond? You put that feeling into words. Now this, when I first came across this book, it just blew my mind away because my wife and I have been doing this for a long time, and it is, the results are fascinating when a child, from the age of 3 all the way up to now, I could testify till 10, Ritz Hashem, will continue on, how the conversation is different. So I used to try that. No, you're not a stupid baby. Or a child comes home, and if you take it out of the sibling rivalry, it's just like, they come and say, I'm stupid, I failed the test in school, I'm stupid. You're not stupid, and you start proving to the child why they're not stupid, and you start bringing in old report cards, and you talk about the parent-teacher conferences that you had, and you even throw a question at them, what's 17 plus 12, and they get it right, you say, see, you're not stupid, and how does the child feel after that conversation?
Stupid.
Right, exactly. Just as stupid as before, because we haven't addressed at all what the child is saying. The child is not saying, prove to me that I'm smart. The child just feels something happened. So the first step in the conversation is simply acknowledging what they're doing. Comment like that could make you mad. It really did. And then we can talk about how that conversation goes, but the conversation will not start if you begin the conversation by trying to disprove what it is that the child did. Just to go through the next one, he does it on purpose. He only burps when I'm around. So now you're getting to older children. Now as older children go, the younger children, it's really much more younger type of issues. He took my toy, he hit me, he spit at me. As the children get older, it gets much more sophisticated, the type of underhanded things that one will do to another one to annoy them. And their children are very creative when they do this because they live in the same home together. They really know what each other's buttons are, and they really like to push them because they love the reaction that it gets. We do that as adults too all the time if you pay attention. But in children, it's really good. So here you have a brother burping around his sister, and it drives his sister crazy. Drives her crazy. So she comes complaining to the parents. He only does it. So he can say, big deal. Ignore him. Right, that's my favorite. Just ignore it. He'll stop. Right, anyone ever try that one before? Right. So the child says, oh, thanks, Dad. So she tries ignoring it, and he walks around burping into her ear because she's been instructed to just ignore it. So the older brother says, great, she's just going to sit here, I'm going to have a bath. Meanwhile, she's steaming and going crazy, and it's not really working very well. So Dad can say, you know, just ignore it, he'll go away. But if the child hears that, he's not going to go. He's having a blast continuing this. So the first step is simply acknowledging what it is that we're dealing with. Now again, as the children get older, again, starting from little kids, it's really just, they're just annoyed at whatever's going on. As they get older, there's a lot of jealousy, resentment issues, fear, insecurity. As the children come to you with their complaints, what they're afraid of. They have tremendous fears, tremendous insecurities. As one child is growing up and they see their other child as being very successful in school, being very successful at sports, being very successful socially, there are lots of issues that they will then have, and it's a tremendous task that we have as parents to understand what it is that they're saying when they come with their complaints. Yeah. Yeah, when you do it long enough, my wife is even better than I am, but you get much more in tune with hearing what they're saying. We're problem solvers, especially men. Like, he called you stupid, I'll disprove it.
Right, so the question is, are you like the empathizer now, not a problem solver, inherently, intrinsically?
No, I don't know if I'll ever get there. No, but it's a much more conscious thing of, what it is like, we'll get to this in a second more, but I'll introduce it here as well, is addressing the child's needs, as opposed to the external issues. In other words, our gut reaction, when in the context where there's another child, forgetting about the example, the child comes home and says, I'm stupid, I failed, but comes in and says, the other sibling did something to me, to avoid the reaction of, I'm going to address that there. and I'm going to focus on what's going on over here, as opposed to, so that gets much more natural in the, you know, you're sitting at your Shabbos table and a kid comes running in and says whatever they say about what somebody else did. They're not letting me play. So instead of right away getting up and dealing with the other child's problem, like, what does this child need? So if the first step is, what are you going through? Oh, you really wanted to play with them? Yeah. And then the conversation will go like, okay, well, what can we do about this? Let the child problem solve themselves more than you're getting involved. So the first step to be able to, the goal is to get the child to figure out the solution. So in this particular instance, the first step is saying, what's the problem? The problem is, oh, you really wanted to play? Oh, someone called you something? How does that make you, that makes you feel really angry? How do you feel about it? In other words, I would ask my child, how do you feel? You're just called a stupid baby. How do you feel about it? Do you feel like a stupid baby? The child will say, yes, or they'll say no.
It's differently than how I understood it. I thought that I understood it as like the first thing is to empathize and to translate that into, so what you're saying is, you know, that you feel alone or that, you know, I'm not spending enough time with you, or whatever it is, right?
Yes.
And you're saying something different here. You're saying that the first step is really to understand what they're saying their problem is. I mean, I see that as...
Yeah, they're similar. They are a little bit different, and I would say it's a little bit of both. This is never an exact science.
Okay, and so you're saying that now for you it's fairly natural to, you know, you don't have to consciously think about it, and you don't get yourself often... making the wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I certainly make mistakes, but with enough practice, getting that as a starting point gets easier.
And the second question is, how do you not make it patronizing, even though that's what you're doing, because you're the pater, the father, who is, you know, talking to the child, but, you know, especially when children get older, you know, to say, like, so, you know, like, when she says, you know, I hate my brother, you say, you know, so... You sound upset. You know, that sounds very, you know, patronizing. And, you know, yeah, you bet I'm upset. So, you know, I thought we were going to connect here.
Right.
So well, how do you...
They want to hear that. In other words, that's part of it, that they feel... that yes, that they're upset and they're angry at their brother. That's a starting point. It's not, nothing's going to be solved just because they recognize that you recognize how upset they are. But it's a starting point. In other words, what we're doing is we're avoiding... You're going into the boss and saying, I can't stand this guy... And the boss says, listen, it's just the way that it is. Deal with it. We don't deal well with that. I don't want to hear that from my boss. So they don't want to hear that from us. They want to hear. What do you want to hear from your boss when you go in and you say, this assistant's driving me crazy. I can't stand having him here. What do you want? I mean, what do you want to hear from him?
Okay, we'll get rid of him. Empathy.
Empathy in what way? What do you really want? This will be like almost segue into next thing. What do you want to hear from the boss? Here you've been working for 10 years for the guy. You've built up this great relationship. You've been very successful. He brings in this new hotshot. Guy full of talent and youth and energy and ideas. And you don't like it one bit. And you come...
I still have the same place.
Yes.
No, but you also want to hear that, like, he gets the fact that you feel betrayed. Completely betrayed, right?
Right. And, exactly. You want to know that you feel betrayed... And that he still values you in the same way that he did.
Maybe he doesn't.
Correct. That's the fear, 100%.
It's a competitive world.
Well, that's exactly it. That's 100%. In other words, we as adults, you should know, when I was looking for my first job as an assistant rabbi, when I spoke to all my mentors and the rabbis who I known, everybody I spoke to said the same thing. Look out. There's nothing you can do about it, but just be careful. Every senior rabbi is inherently suspicious of the assistant rabbi. Because every senior rabbi, by definition, if he's looking to hire an assistant rabbi, is going to be over 45, probably over 50. You're going to be 25. You're going to be young. You're going to be fresh. You're going to have lots of new ideas and lots of energy. And every senior rabbi doesn't like that. Unless they have a lot of job security. So they say, wherever you go, make sure your senior rabbi feels job security, because if he doesn't, you're going to be miserable and you won't succeed. And that's, it's just a reality. And when we have this guy hired, the first thing we think is, you know, maybe he's going to be better than me. Maybe he'll do more. Maybe the boss won't appreciate me. Like, it's well-founded, that fear. So when we storm in and we say, I can't handle this, what we want to hear is, No, you're fantastic. I love what you offer. I don't want you going anywhere. I want to maintain this, and he's going to accomplish whatever he's going to accomplish. But if you don't hear that, you will always in the back of your mind think, he's going to be better, and I'm going to be out of a job. So that is the fear, and that's the reassurance that we have to have. And believe it or not, even in the example, we don't take it as extreme where every child that comes into the family, the older children are suspicious that mom and dad won't love them anymore, but they often are dealing with that competition. They know what it is that we value in whatever the value system that we have, and if their siblings are being good at it and are excelling at it, there's sometimes this fear and concern, well, what's going to be? What if I'm not so good at it? You name it. And so there's a recognizing what it is that they're dealing with is a first step in then being able to address everything else, which we'll move right into the second thing. So the first thing tonight is just acknowledging their feelings, acknowledging where they're coming from. When they come with their complaint, whatever their complaint is, so-and-so hit me, so-and-so did this, so-and-so did that, recognize what it is that is going on with that. Yeah?
But that really addresses when they're complaining about somebody else.
Yes.
What is the right answer, the best answer, when they say, I'm stupid?
I mean, just they come up from school and say, I'm stupid.
I'm stupid.
The best that I think it would be, oh, that's so interesting. Why do you feel that way?
Rather than explain to them,
yes, 100%,
all the 19,000 reasons.
Right. They need to come to those 19 reasons.
Right.
You will never convince a child that they're not stupid if they think they are.
And does it ever matter for you to, oh, by the way, I don't think you're stupid?
Yeah, for sure. You would say so, and that's it. I would totally say, that's interesting, I don't think so, but why do you think that you're stupid? And they'll say, because Jimmy called me stupid.
Right.
Or they'll say, I actually did bad at a test.
And then what do you say?
Excellent. So let's say it's because they did poorly at a test.
Right.
So now you have to know your child in terms of how you want to handle it. Now, sometimes children do poorly because they didn't study, which is a great experience to have, in which they didn't study and they did poorly and then they got a bad mark. And then that's a great opportunity to redirect them from thinking, oh, therefore I'm stupid, into this is how the world works. You got to prepare. But if you actually have a child who is, in other words, the theory is like this. A child who's failing because they're not giving a task where they can succeed is in a bad system. In other words, we can't have our children in systems where they do work hard and fail, then it's not geared for them. They're in the wrong place. So then we as parents have to be aware of that, but assuming that that's not where they're coming from, so then it should be a matter of letting them see that if they work hard, giving them the tasks to be able to do so. But you say, what you would have them, whatever 19 examples you would prove, they really, you need to lead them into that more than, but the thing is always to, in general with children, it's the same thing, is we assume that we know where they're coming from. It's like a five-year-old will ask, I know this is a classic example, a five-year-old says after the baby's born, where did the baby come from? I'm not ready for this. I'm like in the middle of feeding the baby, like, I can't have this conversation now. But the child was really just thinking like on a totally different level, and if you launch into a discussion that they're not ready, they're like, that's such an interesting question. What do you think? Get a feel for where they are, where they're asking the question, and you'll be much more equipped. So it's the same thing that's like, why do you think that? They're not like adults who won't give you answers. If you ask them questions like that, where you actually are interested in their answers, you'll be amazed at what they come up with, and then you'll see how the conversations go from there. Okay, step number two for tonight is the idea, the famous phrase of, but that's not
fair,
our favorite. It's not fair, because life isn't fair. And the truth is, we as parents will never be able to be fair to our children. We will not succeed at that for various reasons. Number one, because children are different ages. They have different needs, different genders. So to be fair to them is asking for failure, because we can't. We can't even split pancakes fairly. Even if you have two children and four pancakes, there is no way you will get it fair. You won't. Because someone will have a little larger piece than someone else. And as much as you try, it will not work. So there's a very interesting attempt or concept we need to pull ourselves from, and that is the concept of being fair. We will run ragged, running in circles, if everything that we try to do is to achieve fairness. What is it? What's better than being fair is being unique. In other words, being equal is almost going to be impossible. You can't be equal, you can't be fair. Some child's going to have different needs than someone else. Someone's going to have more attention. And if you're hung up, if we get hung up on it being exactly even Steven, we are going to find ourselves very disappointed, very frustrated, as will the children, as they constantly point out to us how unfair things are. As an example, your wife sits you down one day and says to you, "So who do you love more, me or your mother?" Right? Great question, right? Who do you love more, me or your mother? Now, there are many wrong answers.
There's only one right one. As long as your mom's not around.
Even if she is. There are many wrong answers that a husband can give to that question. Amongst all of the wrong answers that a husband can give to that question is, "Oh, I love you both the same." Why does that not work?
There's
no such thing. Why is there no such thing? Correct. Right? It's the question is wrong. You can't get started.
It's not wrong for the person asking it.
It is wrong for the person to ask
it.
She doesn't know that. She does. I mean, she might not know that. But regardless, I'm saying in that example, it's inherently wrong because a mother is a mother, and a wife is a wife, and there's no right. It's not one versus the other. It's I love my mother as my mother, and I love my wife as my wife, and it's totally separate. Trying to engage in convincing either one that they're the same is totally fruitless. So with children, we think that because they're both children of ours, that if a child were to ask such a question, that that's a more reasonable question. That's a fair question. And then it allows for the answer of, "Well, I love you both the same." How do children feel when they hear the phrase, "I love you both the same"? Do they buy that? The child who's asking that question is asking it because they're sensing something. Something is not right in their minds. And they ask. And then children often don't ask that. But the idea of saying, "I love you all the same," doesn't ring true to people. Because in the same way as when relationships are so different, relationships with children are also very different. We just have they're different people. And they needed to be treated entirely different. And what they need to hear is that it's unique. In the same way as it's obvious to us when we have a relationship as different as a mother and as a wife, that I love my mother as my mother and a wife as a wife. They're nothing the same. Children also just want to hear uniqueness. I love you and address your needs as they are, not comparing. Let's take a look at her drawings just to get the point across. So the main issue that we're dealing with is, instead of again answering the question, this is on page 5. Moving to page 5. Instead of worrying about giving equal amounts, we want to address individual needs. Now, this is one of the most practical tools in all of parenting dealing with siblings. Child in the first drawing on the top of page 5, "You gave him more than me." So instead of worrying about that and responding, "It's not true, everybody got 4, and then he's going to respond, but his is bigger." No, you're going to get into an argument. It doesn't work. The correct response is to address a child's individual needs. Child gets up in the bottom of page 5, "You gave him more than me." Not addressing whether or not it's true or not true. Totally ignoring that point, the response is, "Are you still hungry? Would you like something else?" That tool is probably the most valuable tool. And then in dealing with the first level that we're dealing with tonight, just the issues that come up all the time, the small little issues in dealing with the home. When a child comes and complains, "It's not fair, so-and-so got X," ignore so-and-so. It's not part of our discussion. The response is, "I don't need to hear about so-and-so. Do you need whatever it is that it sounds like you're still needing, whether it be food, whether it be clothing, what it is that they want?" And that is the response for those situations. The same thing in page 6. Right? A child asks, "Who do you love best?" "I love you all the same." "Told you 100 times. The child doesn't buy that. What does the child want to hear? Child wants to hear, on the bottom of page 6, "Each one of you is special to me. You are my only Robin in the whole wide world. There's no one like you. Your thoughts, your feelings, your smile." That's all the child wants. When you come into the boss with your complaints about the new coworker, you just want to hear how valuable you still are, and you know the solid footing that you are on, that you don't have to worry that the new guy is going to come in with all of their new talents and energy and sweep you away, that the boss still values who you are for what you are. And when it comes to being equal, that is impossible to do. So take a look at the next example. It's really also... All right, little girl's making a party. Who should she invite? So mom begins the conversation. Well, Susie and Jennifer... And as the mom's having the conversation, a little boy comes in. This is like every day. Meisim b'chol yom, it happens, you're involved in one thing, other child comes pulling on your leg. Mommy, you talk too long, I need to tell you something. So now you're pulled. You're in the middle of the conversation with one child, the other child comes in clearly trying to get your attention. And how do we handle it? So on the bottom of page 7, mom tries... oh dear, I guess we have been spending a lot of time. I'll be right with you. Jenny, let's wind this up. How does little girl respond when the brother is successful in pulling mom away?
He
right?
Always gets his...
Oh, we're in the middle of having a conversation. It's if you watch what goes on in the home, how often we're engaged with one child, and another child has a need. Now, sometimes it's a type of need where you must address, especially if it's little kids. You must address it. But you'd be amazed at how much of a circus we're just running from one to another as soon as a new need comes up, leaving the child who had been engaged feeling like I was in the middle of having that conversation. So look at how mom responds on the other side on page 8. On the top, she says, "You're right. I haven't spending a lot of time with your sister. Her birthday party is important. We have to discuss who to invite, what games to play, on and on and on." And then she concludes, "I know it's not easy to wait, but when I'm finished, I want to hear what you have in mind in full detail. I will be with you. I just can't be with you now." This is one of the great little tools in the sense of it's not going to be equal. The little child might need a small amount of time. But what he's struggling with right now is that mom's attention is diverted to someone else. He needs to know that when he needs mom, she'll be there. The child with whom mom is dealing with right now needs to know that when she has mom's attention, mom is with her. And it's not going to be equal, and it's not a matter of looking at the clock. She doesn't respond, "Okay, well, I'm spending 10 minutes with Jennifer now, and then I'll spend 10 minutes with you." That's not the goal. The goal is not to end up being equal or being fair. The goal is simply to give them what it is that as they need. Now, I will make one distinction between when you're doing out-of-the-blue favors for the kids or you're addressing what it is that they need. For example, if you want to just take the kid out to ice cream as a treat, out of the blue, which is a lovely thing. If on those issues you take some and not the others, or one and not their siblings, that will cause a tremendous amount of resentment that out of the blue, you treated this one to something and not anything else. They will all want to be on the, they'll all say, "I don't understand." So it's hard to respond, "Well, they needed it," or this. When you're just doing things, then it's to be more sensitive to being, everybody should be part of that. But when you're responding to a need, then it's impossible to be fair, and there's no need to try, because you can't. A child needs a new clothing. So sometimes you get into the habit of, "Can't buy new clothing for this one, because I need to get for that one." Or, "This one had a birthday, so if I get a gift for this one, I got..." There are times, it doesn't work that way. This one has, whatever circumstances are here, this child accomplished something, so they get something. And yet, not everybody else will. If it's just something where you want to be nice to everybody, then it's much harder to make those distinctions because the kids, then they feel the resentment, and you can't explain to them that there's a need that you're addressing, and you'll address their need also. Then there's what to be more sensitive as far as that goes. But outside of that, then it doesn't have to be that way. Now, I will borrow a love and logic concept from those who have been in some of those talks that I've given, and the concept of going brain dead when you get into these discussions. Now, brain dead, the love and logic concept of going brain dead is where you totally disengage the conversation. The child says, "But it's not fair." You say, "I know. But it's so not, I know." And you say over and over and over again because there is no response. Just for example, tonight I took three of my kids out to the JCC. One of the kids had a basketball game. So one kid was sick during the day, so he wasn't able to go. And then the little three-year-old, "Can't go back. I can't handle that." So she had to stay back. So I ended up taking three, and two are behind. And the two are left behind are filled with complaints of, "That's not fair." Now, one was sick. So, can't go. As a three-year-old, I have no explanation for other than, I've got to be involved with you, I can't take you. But she's now sitting and crying that she wants to go, and the six-year-old who is sick at home wants to go. So there's no real discussion that you can have other than, I know you really wanted to go, I know you really wanted to go, and just saying that over and over again, because it's not going to get anywhere. Or, for example, I have my oldest son, sometimes the kids sometimes like, it's a treat to fall asleep in our beds. Which is fine, the little kids, I don't mind, it's very easy to move them. But as they get bigger, it's not a treat for me to have to move an 8-year-old kid into their bed. So I don't let them, I say, sorry, no deal. So he says, it's not fair. Why can so-and-so go to sleep in your bed? So I say, because I love him. So he says, so why can't I? I love you too. So he says, I don't understand. So I want to sleep in your bed. I love you, and that's why you can't. And you just go over, and all I'm saying to him over and over again is, I love you, and says, but I don't understand. And eventually, he knows now that it's not going to go anywhere, but I'm not going to say anything. I explained to him once, and then that's it. And there's no reason to continue explaining it. And then every time he asks, but I really want to, I know, I really love you, and that's why you're going to have to sleep in your bed. That doesn't make any sense, Dad. I know, I just love you so much. And the conversation, like when you can't explain to a child what it is, there's no reason to engage the discussion, and you just repeat over, and especially when these issues of not being fair, the children need to know that it's because of a need, and you can explain that once, and then just, you don't have to, the more you try to explain, the more we end up losing the battle. It's hard to argue with a 4 or 5, yeah.
So, would it work to illustrate this whole idea that fairness is not equality, it's fairness, and say, you know, yeah, I know that you can't sleep, you know, in our bed, and your brother can stay up until 10, and you can. So, like, different rules apply for different.
You can
sort of illustrate the point.
You can. I don't know that it'll always work. It's fine to try that. If it works, that's great. In other words, in the sense of pointing out that it's not fair this way. It's not that. That's how life works, and that's the education that we're giving them, and that is how it works. And you know, if that works, it's totally fine. It's from my perspective. I haven't, in my experience, found them to say, oh, okay, that's great. Like, right now, this is what I want. So they'll come with an argument of, so I'll go to sleep early. Like, child who wants something will be able to perpetuate. If you get engaged in a long discussion about it, they'll keep it going. They're very good at that. So I just haven't found it successful. I mean, if it works, then it's great. If you can say, you know, look, you're staying up later, that's how it goes, and they buy into that, then, you know, that's fabulous. So just beware of long-ended conversations that go nowhere. Okay, let me do one last thing for tonight. That's fighting. Children like to fight.
Yeah.
No, just the two. Just to summarize, one is the concept of feelings, addressing them. Number two is giving up on fairness, that things are going to be the same for everyone. That it is not a possibility, and just usually doesn't work. Fighting again. This is going to start with smaller children, but these types of fights grow into as we get bigger into bigger issues. But let's just as first in terms of just addressing as it starts with younger children as they begin to fight. Children living in the same home will fight. That is the reality. That's what they do. So, like, birds fly and fish swim, and children fight. They can't handle it. They take each other's toys. They deal with things like that, and that's how that goes. Our role is to stay out of it as much as possible. Don't get involved as a parent. You know, we need to protect and make sure that nobody gets too hurt, but the children need to address it on their own, and it's our job to allow that to happen. That's the overall need. And the way that we do that is in a couple of different ways. Number one is first addressing the need of the child who comes to you. Let's take a couple of just examples just to work it through. Number one, someone comes crying. You're in the kitchen, you're at the Shabbos table, wherever you may be, and someone comes crying because they got hit. And they're screaming in front of you. So now what's our role? We have a screaming child, and they clearly got hit. It's clear. Maybe they were bit, you could see the marks, or they got slapped, whatever it may be. And now they're crying in front of you. So how do we respond to this? So the first thing to do is to respond to the person who's hurt. not to ignore the person who's going to run after the aggressor, we'll get to him or her later, but to address the person right in front of us right now. In the sense of, are you okay? Like, focusing on the child. I have found an amazing thing happens in my house almost every single Shabbos as I'm sitting at the table and some child comes running with a complaint about another child. They say, oh, you look like you're so hurt. Would you like to spend a few minutes here at the table or would you like to go back and play? And they almost immediately say, I'm fine, and they go run off. That's an almost immediate reaction where I'm just focused on, oh my goodness, you look like you're really hurt. Why don't you stay here with me for a little bit until you feel better? So there's no response to the one who hit them right now. It's just a matter of, you look like you're in pain. Why don't you wait here until you calm down? And they usually don't want to do that, and they are gone and magically fine immediately. So the first thing is addressing that, so that the person who is hurt. The other key is fights almost never come in a vacuum. They don't come out of nowhere. So a person comes, one of the children comes, they come with a complaint, they were whatever happened, they have a whole story, which probably is true. But there's almost always another side of that story. They did a little role play in one of the sessions that they did that they write about, where, you know, an older child on a rainy day has nothing going on, so they pull out some of the old blocks that they had in the house that no one's played with in years. They used to be the little kids, no one's playing, they take out the blocks, they start building a zoo. The little child, a smaller child, sees the older child playing with them and all of a sudden wants to play. Comes over, wants to grab a block or two, and the older child says, you know, you can't play right now, they're mine, whole fight breaks out. Who's right and who's wrong? When they were really the younger child's blocks, they weren't playing with it, the older child started, they both now want them. There is no right or wrong. The most fights, if you'll take the time to ask the kids what happened separately, you'll get the same story twice, and it'll be very clear that they're both guilty. They both did something which really irked the other one, and because they're children, they didn't know how to handle it, so a fight broke out. So it is almost, the first thing to do is not to do what we normally do, which is immediately run after the aggressor. Someone got hurt, the child was standing at the table crying. One of the worst things to do is to get up and run after and back into the bedroom is to the one who did something wrong. A, because what really needs to be done is the one who's standing here in front of us crying, that needs to be addressed first. And B, there's a story. The child who's crying, not always, very often, is the reason why the problem got started in the first place, because they were chaperoning their older siblings, and the older siblings many times say, please leave, leave us alone, leave us alone, leave us alone. The little child doesn't know how to do that, and eventually gets hit, and then comes running to mommy or daddy because they got hit, and they did get hit, and they are hurt. But the reason is because the 6-year-old child or the 8-year-old child doesn't know how to handle an annoying little sister who doesn't know how to leave after being asked nicely 10 times. So they eventually hit the child. So it's almost key, I've learned this from experience the hard way, that when I go to the aggressor, before saying anything in terms of the sense of what happened, even though I know that he's the one who smacked the little one silly, and he knows that he smacked the little one silly, and he's expecting to get totally whatever's going to happen to him, and we'll sit down in his room and I'll say, I heard so-and-so's side of the story, tell me what happened. And I will regularly get a full story, which will end with, and so I pummeled him, but he'll tell me the whole story, what led up to it. And it is a very different experience as a parent where you're now dealing with the two sides, and you'll be surprised at how often you need to be aware of that. And when we see what we see, which is we see the one child hitting the other one, we saw it. Or the child comes running and we know it happened, and it did happen, but it's the key thing is to be aware of the entirety of what it is that's going on. So just to see, just to conclude, take a look at the way, take a look at pages 9 and 10, which are classics, just to see it in action. So here's the story. The kids are playing. The older child is playing with his blocks, making up a zoo, whatever he's doing on a rainy day. The little one wants it. So dad can come in. It's worth going through all 8 of these just very quickly. That sounds like a lot, but it'll take 2 minutes. because you'll hear in ourselves the things that we say, which are entirely unhelpful to the situation. Because these are things that happen 20 times a day. Dad comes in. First thing he says is, stop it this minute. Stop it right away. Now, what are they involved in? They're involved in a tug of war. He was playing with it first. She tried. He tried to stop her. They get into a fight. What are they thinking right now? Is Dad saying to stop it? Like, who should stop it? We both want it. If I stop, the little boy thinks, and she wins. She's thinking, they can't stop, because the involvement that they have is such, it's unfair to ask. You can't come in there and tell them just to stop fighting, when the reason why they're fighting is because they're both laying claim to the object, and like, you would never do that at work if you were fighting over something with someone else. And you say, both of you, just stop that. I mean, just stop that. It's mine. And he grabbed it. You don't let go so easily. Worst thing, now I'm moving to the right. Who started it? Right? That's the worst. This we do all the time. Who started it? I mean, who started it? Go back over the simple example. What do you mean, who started it? Where did the start come from? If you ask the older child, the start was when I asked the little one to please leave us alone. We're in the middle of a game and she's ruining it. And the little one, that's not where it started, because she thinks I just came in to ask to play. Where did it start? When my bigger brother pushed me. So asking the children who started it is as unproductive as when you ask two adults who are fighting and you say, who started it? You're going to get the same zero response. Because when two adults are fighting, who started it?
He did.
The other one did. And we really believe it to be true, because in our experience, they did. I was just fine until they didn't do whatever I expected them to do. So those kinds of questions, totally unproductive. Right, or the father comes in and he just lames, you know, shame on you, fighting over little toys. Every time I look at you, you're squabbling. Right, they're not going to appreciate that. That doesn't help them at all. And moving to the top of page 10. Right, I swear you two are giving me an ulcer. You ever hear parents saying these things to children? You're driving me crazy. You're making me insane. You're making me sick. Real helpful to children to hear that. That that makes them stop. Oh, that right. That, not a helpful. Response, or the dad tries to plead with the son, you're too old for them, just give them to your sister. Right? Totally abandoning the child. This I hadn't first, I was playing, why is it fair to make me do that? Asking them to share, or I'm taking them both away from you. Sending them off to their rooms. Both sides, again, feeling it's totally unfair. What is the best response for such a situation? So in this situation, and like all situations in which they fight, have them figure it out. State what's going on. Oh, I see you wanted it first. You started playing with it. She wants to play their hers. Sounds like a problem. I'll tell you what. I'll hold on to them for now. I'm going into the kitchen. When you guys figure out a way that you want to do it, let me know. I'll be happy to give them back to you. So that it's totally up to them. It's in their power, but they have to figure out. As soon as children are fighting over something, and you as a parent intercede and give a decision as to who's right or wrong, the other one is going to resent you. Because there's clearly something on. You don't need to decide. They need to figure it out. And this happens all the time, and you'll be amazed at how good they are at doing it when they are responsible for figuring it out. Simply remove the situation that's causing the problem and say, you can have this back as soon as you guys figure out. You don't have to go to your rooms. You don't have to be separate. Sometimes if that might be necessary. But just the general situation is simply a matter of, when you guys figure out a way to do this, is totally great. They can't figure out who's going to go first at whatever it is that they want to do. They can't figure out how to play with a certain toy. Who's going to play with the game? Which game? Which movie to watch? Whatever it is that they're doing, don't be the decider. You don't need to be. You can simply step back and say, I'm happy to play the video whenever you guys figure this out, however you want to do it. And what you'll see is the negotiating skills will start, and the older ones will usually manipulate the younger ones, which is fine at that age, as long as they figure out a way to work it out where they both feel happy. Which I'm just throwing as a side point to conclude with. I once spoke to a psychologist when one of my older children, I was watching them manipulate the younger ones at every step of the way to get more ice cream, to get the better games. They knew more. So they were older, so they would just figure out a way. And it used to drive me, Rifkin, and I crazy. And we spoke to someone, do we need to intervene? It's so unfair, this little one. And so like, as long as it's not dangerous and the little one feels happy about it, he'll grow up and start speaking for himself. Like, you don't have to worry about it. If he's feeling that he's not getting what he, like, then you got to step in. But if he's happy with the situation, leave it alone. So let them negotiate. Let them figure it out. and you'll see it how adept they are when the toy is taken away and you're not going to decide for them. You're going to let them figure it out. They will come to the conclusion on their own at how successful they will be at being able to do it. Okay, that was just some of the tools for the basics. Just to quickly, again, the main things, recognize what it is that they're complaining about. When they come with their complaint, someone said that I'm stupid, somebody said this, recognize what they're feeling, don't deny it, don't tell them that they're not having that feeling or that it's okay, they just need to deal with it. Recognize what it is that they're dealing with. Reject the feeling, the attempt to be fair and even with everything, because it can't address the needs of the individual. Child says, it's not fair, I didn't get any pancakes. Are you still hungry? Can I get you something to eat? I want that. I don't have pancakes. What can I get? Just address their need, not the other sibling who did it. And primarily with fighting, always just address the needs of the child in front of you, what it is that they need. Not necessarily it is that what, in terms of the aggressor, leave them alone for now. Just focus on the child that is in front of you. Your handlers have a bunch of other things which I just thought would be valuable to see. I highly recommend the book. It is a fantastic book. Just as far as going through these things, and for those interested, so tomorrow I want to go through some of the bigger issues of roles and comparisons and how we handle children as they grow old, in which we create much more long-lasting issues and how we can allow them to become who they need to become. All right, have a great night.
Thank you.